Hey folks, Godless Kinzer here from the podcast Watch It Burn. When I'm not out burying improvised education devices alongside conservative convoy routes, I listen to the other members of the Progressive Podcast Network at newmediarevolution.org. Why don't you go on over there and give them a listen? I'm sure you're going to enjoy what you hear. Progressive Podcast Network at newmediarevolution.org. Our IEDs blow conservative minds. What's up? Godless Kinzer here, podcasting to you from LSA Anaconda near beautiful sunny Balad, Iraq. It's been another week, and you know what that means? It's time once again to hunker in the bunker for another episode of Watch It Burn. Watch It Burn is dedicated to the memory of Sergeant Brian Brewster and all of our comrades who have fallen, from Captain Parker's Minuteman to the Soldier of Today. Hey everybody, welcome back. Sorry about the sound quality of the last two shows. I put them together pretty late at night and was kind of groggy, and I think I unwittingly activated some settings here in my mixing program that probably shouldn't have been set there. I noticed it was really, really crappy sounding. I went ahead and I put them up in a hurry because I was pretty tired and I hadn't listened to them in, through another media player, just through the mixing program there. So everything sounds great through the mixing program, because it's just the baseline raw data that I'm hearing. So, just wanted to apologize for that. Before I get in to any kind of a deep subject matter, which is doubtful, because I don't really have anything planned, so I'm probably just going to, I don't know, kind of freeform ramble about little crap around here. I did another episode at another point, but the sound quality was just so god-awful, I went ahead and just deleted the whole thing. So there was a lost episode, I guess, but unfortunately it'll never be available because it's completely deleted. Man. I'm still fighting off this damn head cold, sinus congestion, sniffles. So in case I didn't mention it in one of the episodes that actually did get posted, I wanted to put out some thanks there that I not sure, but I think I might have thanked these people in the one that didn't go through. So, I'd like to thank a couple more of my donors, Lenore and Christine and Kelly. And as I'm checking my records here, I think that's all of the recent ones, the recent donors that I have information on right now. So I'd like to say hi to Gregory in Alaska. I apologize for taking so long to email you back. And as I said in the email, I do appreciate the constructive criticism. Thank you very much. And some of the kind words you put in there as well. It's good to hear that there are people out there listening to me. And I got a couple phone calls. Unfortunately, one of them was only like about 3 seconds that was actually recorded, and couldn't really make out what was being said because it sounded like just background noise, like somebody giving up on the phone or something. But I do have one phone call tonight that I'm going to be putting on here. Yeah, I encourage you all. I mean, yeah, like I said, I'm paying a couple bucks right now. I think that was in the last episode where I said that. Well, anyway, I'm paying about $2 a month plus 3.9 cents a minute for the incoming call. So, I mean, come on, give me a call. It's 1-888-82-REVOLT. Or, as usual, you can always email me at watchitburn, one word, at godlesskinzer, KINSER.com. Let me know what you think. If you've got any subject matter you'd like me to cover, if you'd like to hear my take on it, what I think, or if you'd like to just opine about the show. And so far, most of the calls, actually I think all of the calls I've gotten have been from my friends over at the Mark Maron Show blog at markmaron.com. It's a progressive political and comedy talk show by until recently nationally syndicated radio host. Been a stand-up comic for a couple decades now and does a very astute and quite funny, very funny show actually. with a lot of pretty cool characters. Him and his co-host slash head writer, Jim Earle, they put together some great stuff, great characters. In fact, I think I'm going to put together a little tribute promo type of thing with clips from them and put it on here somewhere. But I had to get that all that out of the way, and as I've said before, really should go to SirNoSir.com and check that place out. Check out that movie. See what you can do about finding a place near you where you can see it. Also, a friend of mine, you should go to his website, is Dave Rabbit, the infamous and much celebrated pirate radio DJ of Vietnam. And his website is RadioFirstTermer.com.vn. And I think that's everybody I wanted to mention at the moment, except, at the moment that's everybody I've got on my list. If I've forgotten anybody, I'm sorry. I get a shitload of emails coming in all the damn time. And if I forgot you, it's only because you got lost in the shuffle, not because of any slight against you. So I apologize, and I will attempt to get to you at a later date. I'm going to go ahead and pause this for a moment, because I need to get something to eat.
Activist?
No, I wouldn't say that.
If mass media exists to invest our lives with artificial notions and arbitrary values, let us take that media back.
How do you possibly think you can make a difference?
We need to talk more, we need to listen, we need to ask more questions.
These are the puppets of the government.
Do you not worry for your own safety?
You know, even if they came to bump me off, it would be a hollow victory for them because it would not stop the word, spreading. They're too late.
The power of the documentary, the drama of truth, alters our understanding and perceptions of the world around us. You choose mass media or real media for the masses. Audio activism? Sounds good to me. Documentally.com. Documenting the mind.
And that was a promo by Christian Payne. He is a photojournalist from the UK who spent a year up in Kurdistan last year. He emailed me recently, and I really, really do enjoy his podcast. It's really good stuff. It's kind of interesting to hear the perspective from how the war for democracy is being fought on the other side of the pond, so to speak. And I urge you all to give him a listen at documentally.com. And he is a member of our Progressive Podcast Network as well. I am going to try every week to give a review or put a promo on here and at least talk a little bit about one, maybe two, maybe more, depending on time, of the other members of the network to give you guys a feel of what else is out there. And he emailed me and said... he offered me his old field recorder equipment because he is planning on upgrading, and hopefully he'll be able to do that. It'd be great if that could get to me soon. Like, I'm not begging him or anything, but I do have a potential meeting coming up with some very important persons in U.S. politics here, and that's all I'm going to say because of operational security reasons. Because I don't want it known who or when or where they're going to be at. You know, it's just safer that way. But if I could find a way of recording that and putting it on here, me talking with them, I thought it would be a nice kind of a special treat for my listeners, for all of you out there who, I say you make it possible, but you motivate me. You really do. You keep me motivated to do this. And it's really been something that I enjoy doing, just because of the feedback I've been getting. But if you go to documentally.com, you can read blog posts by him on the various shows that he does. You can listen to the shows there, subscribe, download, all of that. And if you want to see some of his photos he's taken, go to christianpayne.com. He's done some really good stuff over there. I was looking at it myself a couple days ago, and I was pretty impressed, but I don't know, it seems really good to me. I like the fact that this guy really went into some depth on the history of the Kurds, and the fact that something I gathered just from working with them the last time I was here, being on a gate guard with two of them for an 8-hour shift every night for 3 weeks, Alright, there go the neighbors. Pause for a second here. Try to talk a little bit in between, because the wingman's going to be taken off any second now. But I worked with the Kurds and talked to them quite frequently on guard shifts and realized that these guys are going to have a Kurdistan. Even if they have to kill every Arab and every Turk in the world to do it, they are committed to having their own homeland. And they've been, you know, they've been fucked with enough. Come on, neighbors. And taken enough shit for so long from everybody around them that they're pretty much fed up. And if they seem like dickheads, it's because they've basically been taught by example around them to be dickheads. So, like I said, go ahead and check out his site and check out his portfolio site there and give him a listen. It's really good stuff, and it's really interesting to hear the perspective from the other side of the Atlantic in the war on fighting against the war on democracy here. I would also like to say that it's a great... It's just, I love listening to British people talking, because it just, I love the accent, because I am a great fan of talking, as you have no doubt noticed, and it just sounds so much more pleasant to hear the English language spoken in its original manner. Just a little pet thing of mine. Other than a German accent or a Russian accent, I have to say I don't find anything sexier than a woman with a British accent. Here you go, folks. This is why I love the Mark Maron Show.
Now, here's the other disturbing one. This is Sophie, is what's the name of the candy. And I believe these are modeled after feminine napkins. Is that possible?
I won't know until I get a taste. How are they?
Oh, these are awful.
You have cotton mouth?
This is a godless soldier in Iraq. I don't want to say his name unless he wants me to, so I'm going to put him on. How are you, sir?
Oh, yeah, Aaron. There's a slight delay, because I'm calling here from Iraq, so...
So how do you want me to address you on the air?
You can call me Godless. That's fine.
All right, Godless.
Jim, I love U.S. Eddie. I own Booty Tank.
That was an incredible role. Thank you.
That movie is a masterpiece. I don't even understand it.
New data shows a significant increase in the practice of oral and anal sex among American teens and the young. Doctors believe the increase in sexual activity may have something to do with the fact that movies cost $12 a pop, gas is $3.50 a gallon, but licking somebody's junk is free, my friends. Lick that junk. Lick it. Lick it.
I learned some lessons about expressing myself maybe in a little more sophisticated manner.
Really? When's that going to start? You sound like a reprimanded child.
It is an act of a child, yeah. Somebody being told, you better say this because your poll number's down in the toilet.
If he's going to apologize, he ought to start apologizing for a lot of things. There's a bigger list than just saying, bring it on, I'll tell you that. It's not enough just to condescend and say, yeah, of course I'm against that, man. I mean, at some point you got to speak the hell up.
Besame mucho.
That was awesome. Is that all you know?
Yeah.
All right.
Dig it! Dig it!
I have to say, I love that show. I've loved those guys ever since they were on Morning Sedition. Show which sadly is gone, but they're doing good stuff on their new show. You can find them on KTLK out of Los Angeles. KTLK.com should find you the show times and the get you to the stream to listen to it if you're not in the LA area. And anyway, this next segment is not about that. Thought occurred to me as I was reading the latest issue of the Limbaugh Letter, in which he interviews David Horowitz about his crusade to deliberalize America's universities, and in it they talk about Ward Churchill, the professor who was shredded in the media for his comment comparing some of the victims on September 11, 2001 to little Eichmanns. And having read his piece, I figured, you know, from, you know, seeing it in context, which is not ever introduced in any of these accounts, that the manner in which he was referring to them was kind of, in a way, playing on, I think it's Hannah Arendt's, I think was her name, or Hannah Arendtson, I think it's Hannah Arendt's, her idea of the banality of evil, where it's like the old saying that, you know, in order for evil to triumph, it's not necessary for men to do evil, but simply for good men to do nothing while evil happens. And I think that my view of it was that his statement was basically pointing out how we're all complicit in the crimes of our corporate culture merely by our assent, our consent, and our participation in it as part of the machine of business in the United States. And I realized why they were so up in arms was simply that this was a case of metaphorically white people using the N-word. And the new N-word now is Nazi. And in much the same way as the N-word of reference to African Americans, they feel that you cannot use the N-word unless you are part of that group. It's not appropriate. It's otherwise very disrespectful. And I have seen that with the Goose Stepper crowd, the right wing, that you cannot call someone a Nazi unless you are a Nazi. And that is why they're always so up in arms when someone points out any similarities with current policy and events to those of Germany in that time period. And that's because it's, you know, just a case of them saying, that's not your word, that's our word, you have no right to use it. But I thought I would just throw that out there a little bit, how Nazi is the new N-word, and why we as liberals are not allowed to use it by the right wing. Only they are allowed to make Nazi comparisons. This segment is part of a conversation between myself and two other guys in the platoon. Well, one guy in the platoon, another guy in the company, different platoon, my roommate, Ranting Ronnie, and the other guy from my platoon, Cracker, one of the engine guys. I'm going to go ahead and just put part of it up here because it was a long, rambling thing that went on for about an hour and a half, and it really showcases my skills at digression. So I'm probably going to just take snips of it here and there and put it up on here periodically throughout various episodes to come. So without further ado, here's part of the conversation between Godless Ranting Ronnie and Cracker. Problem with that, though, is, okay, they didn't find them, right? So what do we do next? Okay, we come into Iraq instead, and we start pulling forces out of Afghanistan, like the SF teams from the group that actually is responsible for the Middle East and speaks Arabic. So we pull out all of our Arabic language and Pashto and Urdu and all of the, you know, all of the Muslim nations, all the Middle Eastern language specialist guys, we pull them out of Afghanistan, out of that surge, and bring them to Iraq. And the teams we put in place, I'm not sure 100%, but I think they were the Latin America teams. See you guys over there. We'll put in the guys that speak Portuguese and Spanish instead.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, you know.
Oh, well, you know, it only makes sense if you don't want to find the guy. And they don't want to find him because have you ever read 1984?
No.
There's a character in there, Emmanuel Goldstein. Emmanuel Goldstein is the enemy, the archetypal enemy that the party, the Big Brothers, you know, the party has put in place to keep people afraid and keep people full of hate for some external enemy so they don't look at their government too closely.
More or less a scapegoat.
Yeah, a scapegoat, exactly. And so we've got Osama bin Goldstein. And if they don't catch Osama bin Goldstein, then they can keep saying, well, bin Laden's still out there. He's still out there. We're still at war. We're still under a threat.
And as long as they don't find him, the truth doesn't come out.
Exactly. Now, you know, they say, hey, why haven't we found bin Laden? Everybody says, why haven't we found bin Laden? They say, well, look at the monkey. We got Iraq over here. You know, you got Saddam bin Laden over here. Osama bin Laden, you know, Osama Hussein, Saddam bin Laden, dude. You know, and they keep blurring it until people are like, yeah, you know. And I'm waiting until they say it was the Venezuelans that blew up the World Trade Center. And that was my conversation with Cracker. He's a young guy, not as well informed yet on politics, but he's very interested and he's learning all the time. So that was pretty much just me giving him some history lesson and an overview of the situation in the region. But it got really interesting when Ranting Ronnie, the roommate, came in, because he is a very well-educated guy. And it was really interesting, some of the topics we got onto. We were all over the map at one point, so I'm just going to put a segment in here that is one of the more coherent segments here. You have British veterans of, you know, basically a counterinsurgency operation, police action in their, you know, in Northern Ireland, that they have the knowledge and the experience to know that, all right, this crowd's ugly, but they're not a threat yet. And as soon as a threat pops up, we're gonna Barney Fife it. We're gonna nip it in the bud. You know, we're gonna take out the troublemakers as they cause the trouble. And so they had a lot more success down in Basra, until they started having their own fucking torturing people shit. And that's just, I think that we were a bad influence.
Well, it's generic for almost any army who invades the country to go ahead, you know, as the status quo, and go ahead and just burn the villages, quote unquote, and win their hearts and minds.
Yeah.
Everybody has to go to the burn their villages phases, and then they go win the hearts and minds. Little pamphlets raining from the sky, making people happy.
Yeah. Well, I see it as a larger example of the Stanford Prison Experiment. You familiar with that one? Let's say the psychology and all?
Not 100%.
Well, in Stanford, they separated these, I think they were psychology students. They separated them into two groups. One was going to be prison guards, one was going to be prisoners. And they basically had them, I don't know if they had like an old abandoned prison or jail or something they were using.
Yeah, they were using an old abandoned jail on that one.
Yeah, they had them walk, you know, had them basically live there and live the role, play the roles of guards and prisoners. And eventually the guys playing guards started being severely fucking abusive to the guys that were playing prisoners.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of, you know, it's like the old saying, power corrupts.
There's a lot of studies done about that, how these people adjusted their mentalities and how the prisoners reacted because of isolationism and all these other symptoms. They were trying to basically understand what victims were going through during the Holocaust and things like that. That's not the sole reasoning why they did those experiments.
Hold on. Dear listener, is why I hate the Air Force.
Off we go into the wild blue.
Jesus. Okay. Now that we've been so rudely interrupted, thanks Air Force, you know, you can have your little war, but we're trying to make a show here. God. You know, I'm going to have to get a casual pay. I'm going to go and get some more dip. I'm going to have to buy some crackers for the peanut butter I got now, because war as hell, I'm out of crackers. But anyway, on the Stanford Prison Experiment, and it's basic psychology we've seen all the time that, you know, power corrupts. People have to have some, there has to be some kind of oversight and some kind of limiting factor, you know, or people do run amok. Now, I believe that basically people are good.
Basically, yes, they could be considered that.
But temptation is too easy to fall into. That's the thing, is we have to balance, you know, our tendency to want to do good with our tendency to want to be in command and be in control and to be the powerful one. So every one of us wants to be the tribal chieftain. Every one of us wants to be the alpha male of the herd and have their pick of the females. Well, not the females around here. But, you know, I mean, just in the general terms.
I like to think people have higher motivations of that, but I suppose it all comes down to biological influences over generations.
Oh, yeah, well, we have the biological imperative to reproduce, to propagate the species. And that biological imperative, basically, it translates in the modern world into how are we better able to attract a mate is by money and power.
Yes.
And if you have money and power, you can attract the more suitable mate, or the one that's more to your liking, and then, you know, the biological subconscious reptilian brain preferences come in.
Oh, that's why we shit can over 3,000 years of philosophy and religious thought and enlightenment, because these guys weren't getting laid. That's good shit.
You know, they're tiny men that are worried about the size of their genitalia.
Oh.
And so they start these wars because, like George Carlin said, wars start because it all boils down to, what, they have bigger dicks than we do? Bomb them.
Yes, that's
and of
true.
Course, these men get to sling around all these large dick-shaped objects like missiles and bombs, and right. they get a more manly feeling out of it. And those of us who understand that we are happily average, and know that if, as in the case with myself and my wife, I realize my limitations, and so I have adapted my technique and become more skilled in other methods, so to speak.
Yeah.
I have learned to compensate, because that's what we have the brain for and what we have the opposable thumb for, is to adapt and overcome our environment or our own personal limitations.
Well, that's a little bit of a slingshot of a theory there.
Well, you know, like I said earlier, I digress so wildly sometimes even I forget what the hell I was originally talking about.
Nice, yeah.
I digress smoother than greased owl shit.
Nice.
But, I don't know. Now I'm at a loss, because I just blew my entire thought load at once there. On a wild, wild digression. My thought train derails frequently.
Yeah. I think way about 15 minutes ago, before the planes came by, we were talking about the truth about this war.
Oh, okay.
About how truth can be fabricated.
I can't remember that far back.
Oh, never mind. About truth and how it can be altered, and I'd like to see people expose themselves to the reality of why these things happen, which we were talking about this whole time, the reality that there are greedy people in control who just want to ruin everyone's lives.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's all the end product of all this is. I mean, there's got to be some sort of tangible result, maybe making society better, making the world quote-unquote free, even though they have their forcing consumerism down people's throats, trying to distract them away from the horrors and things like that. And attach them to material items and all these other wonderful things, just drowning them in misery, in sociological and financial misery, and just scoping and... Let's see, what's the word for it? Just... Well, okay, lack of a better word, totally bullshitting society at a large.
Yeah.
To make them believe something that isn't even there. There is no... I mean, the Department of Justice knew that there are terrorists in America, terror cells, for 20 years now. They could identify and point out over 250 different ones.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, over 1,800 sleepers turned themselves in over the 10 years when the Cold War was ending. Now it's a popular concept for, you know, there to be fear in America, and for, you know, everyone to be afraid to walk to school or drive their car, or, you know, because oil is the biggest thing now, or everyone's going to die, and, you know, there's this horrible people with biological diseases sending them into envelopes to your house, and fucking everything's just going wrong, and...
You know, it's like Jello Biafra from The Dead Kennedy is one of his spoken word things. Don't go into the woods, Little Red Riding Hood. There might be a terrorist in there. You know?
You might be a communist.
And that's the new scare tactic. Yeah, first, you know, the enemy was the British. And then it was the French for a little while during the XYZ affair under John Adams' presidency. And then you have, you know, the British again in 1812. We had external threat. And then, you know, it's just there's always got to be an external threat for the dominant power elite to maintain control. And they don't understand that we get along just fine without an external threat. You know, I mean, sure, okay, we start getting a little bit fucking... The problem they see, what they see as the problem is the fact that when we don't have an external threat, we start watching our leaders. And that's a problem for them, because you can't rob the American people blind when they're looking at you. You know, they realize that without an external threat, they can't get away with their corruption.
Exactly. I mean, if you break it down in black and white, how many people are in the government at large? People sitting up in D.C. at any given point in time, there's like maybe, what, a couple hundred?
That are there at once, yeah.
Yeah, just a couple hundred.
Rarely ever, only during the State of the Union do you see everybody there at once.
If everybody was there at once, there's all these assholes just sitting around. A small minority, maybe less than 0.001% of the entire population of the United States, telling us what to do.
Yeah.
Now, when they start making these mistakes and these quote-unquote blasphemies on air, and just they're saying, well, I think the American public needs this, I think the American public needs that. Well, what if the American public just decided to siege the White House and burn the fucking place to the ground?
You know, I mean, you know, look what happened to Mussolini, you know, and we still got our shoes.
Yeah.
You know? I'm telling you, man. I mean, how bad do you got to fuck up your country that they beat you to... They freaking... After they've killed you and hung you up, they beat your corpse with their shoes. Okay, I mean... Yeah. You know, and...
They were selling tickets to that one, from what I understand, but...
I tell you, boy, raffle it off, put it in the general fund for the rebuilding of Italy.
Yeah. Hang your leaders by a flagpole. Beat the crap out of them.
Rebuilding fundraiser. Buy a shoe for a buck and contribute to the cause.
Kind of like, you know, damaging a car at a carnival.
Yeah. Pay your, you know, throw in 5 lira, get a shoe, and go take a whack at Mussolini's corpse.
Yeah. Probably do that with some of our leaders. It'd be pretty nice.
But, I'm telling you, man, a lot of people in our country would like that. And, I mean, it's... I don't advocate violence until it's actually necessary. I'm not going to say I'm one of these types, you know, we've got to remove them from power legally and peacefully. Okay, Mike Malloy says that because, yeah, he could get screwed bigger than shit because he has a national syndicated audience. If he says outright, some of these people need to die. You know, myself, I will not be wishy-washy and say legally and peacefully, of course, because I am under no constraints that I am going to be brutally honest and say that if the time comes when it's necessary, then by all means, firebomb the motherfuckers.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because it's like Jefferson said, let the people take arms. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I've read plenty of what the founders had to say, and I tell you, you know, a lot of people don't realize unless they listen to Tom Hartman, which he's a fucking genius, by the way. That's anybody who's listened to him knows that, so I don't need to beat that down. But as he pointed out, the Boston Tea Party, one of our, really our first significant act of rebellion in our country, was over corporate interests. It's over the fact that the Dutch East India Company got a massive tax cut in their favor so they could undercut all the local tea sellers, and that was going to run out small businesses. Basically, the Dutch East India Company was the Walmart of their day. And what people don't realize is the same thing is going on now. Big entrenched corporate interests have their hands in our government. And so, if, you know, basically the next really significant political revolt that we could make, in a way, would be an economic revolt against these corporations that some people try to claim that these corporations are people for legal purposes just because of something that a court clerk wrote in the notes of a Supreme Court decision in the 1800s.
All I'm saying is give peace a chance.
Wait. Up.
It's time to take to the street.
Mainstream media, where are you?
George W. Bush was born on third base but thinks he hit a triple.
WakeUpAM.blogspot.com.
All the oil men in the White House.
Rumsfeld's cronies, buddies, neocon pals.
What is wrong with this picture?
It just bypasses whatever's in the Constitution.
Just when we think it can't get any worse.
Fascist government. Dictatorship.
He's like the ultimate spoiled brat.
Wake up and smell the oil field.
Remember who said that.
This isn't health care. This is get sick and die care.
Mainstream media doesn't cover it, so that's why we're here.
Yeah, look for me at Gitmo. That's where I'll be.
After September 11th.
Playing the 9/11 card every time they
are subject to eavesdropping.
These actions are in the president's authority under the Constitution.
It's ridiculous.
The law.
It's poo-poo.
WakeUpAM.blogspot.com.
Dare anyone to call me a conspiracy theorist.
Those were the fine ladies of Wake Up America, Wake Up AM podcast. A trio of moms who have had enough, they're fed up, and they're speaking out. And I'm a great fan of moms, having one myself, and I have a soft spot in my heart for them, seeing as I have children, and my wife is the coolest mom I know. My mom is pretty close, though. So I want to play a song for them by David Rovics, because in light of the Haditha massacre, and they had been so kind as to play a clip from my previous episode discussing the Haditha massacre and my thoughts on it, and in the course of their discussion, they mentioned the name of Lieutenant William Calley, the officer in charge, the platoon leader who was in charge of the troops that committed that massacre, and they couldn't remember the name of the pilot who had stopped them by landing his helicopter between the troops and the children that were still alive, the widows and children there, and training their guns on the GIs, and Hugh Thompson was his name. And Hugh Thompson, the true patriot, a man who saw something that was wrong and said, enough, I will not allow this to continue, it is just wrong. And he stood up for what he believed, stood up for what was right, put himself in harm's way to save the innocent. I'm wondering about this situation, who is going to come out as the other officer the other officer that was involved with the My Lai massacre, aside from Hugh Thompson and Lieutenant Kelly, was a young lieutenant whose job was to obscure and to diminish, I should say minimize, the events of that day in that village in Vietnam. And his name was Colin Powell. Many of us know his name. A lot of Americans know his name, probably the majority, though after seeing Jay Leno on the street asking people questions about current events, I'm not sure it's the majority, really, that know his name. But very few of us know his history and his involvement with that incident. So, without permission from David Rovix, unfortunately, but with the certainty, absolute certainty, that in the context that I am using it, he would not mind my use of his song, as I am giving credit where it's due, and I think playing it for the purpose it was intended.
Hugh Thompson was a pilot, just like many more, fighting for old glory on a far-off foreign shore. He was on a lethal mission, only one of many, following his orders to kill the enemy. To kill the enemy. He flew low above the village, searching for the foe. When he saw a wounded child on the path below, he thought this to be a sure sign that the enemy was near. So he radioed for backup, and more choppers did appear. More choppers did appear. Beware of an attack. And then the child died by a bullet through her back. And when he looked around for the culprits of the scene, it was a company of men in U.S. military green. U.S. military green. The dead were in the hundreds, strewn all around, in this place called My Lai, which once had been a town. There was a hut of huddled children, soldiers had them in their sights. Hugh decided at that moment to fight for what was right. To fight for what was right. Weapons on the GIs, and his copter crews obeyed, and stood among the children, tattered and afraid. The whole town had been murdered, but for some kids and widowed wives, and Hugh Thompson made sure that those remaining would survive, that those remaining would survive. It was a 15-minute standoff in a knee-deep sea of red, amidst the moaning of the dying and the silence of the dead. Hugh Thompson was a soldier, and he served his country well. On the day he saved the lives of a dozen kids in hell. Of a dozen kids in hell.
First Terminer, Iraq. This is Dave Rabbit from Saigon to the Desert Sands.
And everywhere beyond and in between.
Hard acid rock music and good times for the American men and women on the front lines. Radio First Terminer, Iraq. Coming soon to a war near you.
All right, in honor of all the Morning's Edition crew, Mark and Mark, Jim, Kent Jones, PW, Kalo, Clutch, formerly Smarty Pants, Larson, Big Goliath, Little Goliath, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey, of course, News Daddy, otherwise known as Wayne Gelman, and everybody else who I have inadvertently forgotten. I'm going to go ahead and bring back my old final segment, bumper music. Alright, everybody. Some of you know what this music means already, but for those of you who don't, it means we're coming into my final segment, and it's time to wrap it up. So here we go, the end is in sight. Enjoy.
Hey, Godless Kempster, this is Bill Alvarez from the Florida Soapbox Podcast. I'm just listening to episode number 8. Everything considered, I actually have enjoyed it quite a lot. Thank you for putting that out. I mean, you definitely do sound tired. I know you've been very busy, so it's much appreciated that you actually took the time to make a new episode. Well, happy Memorial Day. I love the podcast, and I will keep listening to it as often as you put it out. All right, take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks again for listening, everybody. If you liked what you heard, you can go ahead and go on my website, godlesskinzer.com, K-I-N-S-E-R, and look over on the right sidebar. You'll see a little Amazon Honor System box. You can go ahead and click on there and make a donation to support this fine program. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you next week.